Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, I'm joined by Josh Reinstein, a member of the Israeli Knesset and a great guy who understands Israel better than almost anyone else. We go through the biggest lies of Israel. Why was it formed? Is it necessary for America? All of it we go through. But before we get started, I want to thank you for supporting our program at charliekirk.com/support. charliekirk.com/support. Thank you guys for getting behind our program, chipping in, and supporting what we are doing at this podcast. We are doing two podcasts a day, one on the weekend, and on the weekend they're advertiser free thanks to your support at charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. I am joined by my friend Josh Reinstein. He has written a very interesting book about a place that is very near and dear to my heart. I am a outspoken advocate for Israel. I defend Israel against all of the bitter anti-Semites that are in America. And I'm a proud Christian, and I think Israel is a very important part of the Christian tradition and heritage. Josh, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thank you, Charlie. I'm a huge fan. It's great to be on the show.
Well, thank you. So show us your book, first of all, and tell us about it and why you wrote it.
All right. The book's called Titus Trump and the Tribe of Israel, The Power of Faith-Based Diplomacy. I'm the director of the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus, the Knesset being the Parliament of Israel's caucus that deals with Christians. And I'm also the president of the Israel Allies Foundation. And over the last 15 years, I realized that it's Christians, not countries, that are standing with Israel. And because of the deep love and support from Bible-believing Christians, I realized that we need to start working together and doing things together. And then when we did, the results were astounding. But it led to a lot of questions. You know, you were at the, for instance, the Jerusalem embassy opening, and of the 800 people there, 700 of them were American Christians. And people started saying, why? You know, why are Christians standing with Israel when no one else will? And I thought it was important to write a book that explained not only why are Christians standing with Israel, but how they can stand with Israel, and what's the future of the relationship between Jews and Christians in the 21st century.
That's terrific. So tell us about the pro-President Trump approach you have in your book.
Well, look, President Trump, by any measure, is the most pro-Israel president in the history of America. The Israelites Foundation, which is dedicated to fostering what we call faith-based diplomacy, that's taking biblical support and turning into real political action, made a list about 5 years ago of the top 10 things America could do for Israel. Donald Trump in the last 3.5 years has done 9 of them. It's outstanding. And he did them so fast that people hardly noticed. If any president would have even done one of them, it would have been a massive deal. But it's incredible what he's done. And he's done it because Bible-believing Christians has come out and support him and said, this is what I want to happen. And unlike other presidents, Donald Trump keeps his word. And so he made a commitment to the base of the Republican Party that he would do these things in the Republican platform on Israel. And he followed through.
So can you tell us more about those specifics? Moving the embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing the Golan Heights, terminating the Iran deal. Walk us through that, how pro-Israel President Trump has been.
Okay, well, let's start with the embassy move. This is something that was decided in 1995 in the Embassy Act. It was deferred every 6 months by every single president until Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, even though everyone warned him against it, they said there was going to be a third intifada, there'd be war on the street. He said, no, I made my commitment. I'm going to do it, and I'm doing it. And he did it. And guess what? There wasn't any of that attack on Israel. In fact, I believe it brought peace closer together to Israel. Number two, the Golan Heights. This is something that the Israeli government did a long time ago. We declared sovereignty in the Golan Heights, yet no one would recognize it. It made no sense. Why? What, are they going to give Golan Heights to Assad, the horrible dictator, 2.5 hours drive from Jerusalem, so he can shoot down on our civilian communities? it was only Donald Trump and his administration that recognized that. You also talk about the Iran deal, a massive thing. You know, that was the worst deal in history. And it really changed the Middle East. It made it that the problem in the Middle East was not Iran developing nuclear weapons, but the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Trump said, no, that's not the case. The problem is Iran supporting terrorist organizations and doing and developing nuclear weapons to carry out their foreign policy of wiping Israel off the map. But he didn't stop there. He also passed the Taylor Force Act. So for the first time, America is not paying for Palestinian salaries to terrorists. He also defunded UNRWA, the UN organization that has four times the budget of the UNHCR, which is for every other single refugee in the world. This organization is only for Palestinian refugees. They have four times the budget, and they just perpetuate the problem of Palestinian refugees. He tackled that. He defunded it. He made a huge executive order on anti-Semitism for the first time, saying that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. He stops calling Judea and Samaria, the heartland of Israel, illegal settlements. Each one of these things are phenomenal. And I go through it in the book, and you can see, you know, one by one, what he did and why he did it. And so I think it's very important that people understand the power of what happens when Christians get involved in political advocacy. And also they need to understand what happens when Christians don't.
Mm. So, Josh, can you walk through what are some of the biggest myths that Americans believe about Israel? I go through this all the time. People believe that Israel was illegally founded. People believe that Israel is a colonialist experiment. These are lies. People say that it is not the homeland of the Jews, which is a lie. Can you walk through just a 101 on Israel and the relationship that we as Americans have with the Holy Land and the necessary bond that holds us together?
Well, I think that's a very important question. You know, in the book, there's actually a whole chapter dedicated to that alone. What people don't understand is that, first of all, Israel is the only country that was founded thousands of years ago and is still around today. So our connection to the land of Israel is deeper than almost all other countries, people's connections to countries. This is a country that only had one capital of Jerusalem ever, and that was under the Jewish King Solomon, King David, and the Jewish community. So our history to the land is very deep. We also bought a deed to the land. You know, Abraham bought the land, and also Isaac and Jacob. You know, the biggest deed ever to a land is called the Bible. And the Bible is the deed of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. So we're not any conquerors in the land of Israel or anything like that. You know, it's the same blood libel that they spread in Europe, that we were these wandering Jews trying to take over people's lands. Anti-Semites hate Jews when they're in other people's countries, but they also hate Jews when they're in their own country. It doesn't really matter. But what you brought up, which is important, is why is Israel and America such good friends? Why does America say that Israel, this small country no bigger than the size of New Jersey, is our greatest ally? And why do we say that America is our best friend? It's because only America and Israel are founded on Judeo-Christian values. And I go into that in the book. Our linkage, what brings us together, is that both of our countries were founded on these deep values that come from a source, and that source is the Bible. And people forgot that part of history. People don't understand that the founding fathers of America were devout Bible-believing Christians.
That's true. That is absolutely right. What is the connection to Titus? That's a book of the Bible. It's on the cover of your book. Tie that together for us.
Oh, okay. So basically what I show in the book is that whenever you look at Israel from a political point of view, it doesn't make sense. Israel only makes sense if you look at it from a biblical point of view. Okay, so the minute, if you know the Bible, and that's why Christians love Israel. If you know the Bible, then you understand what's happening in Israel. You can pick up the Bible, you can pick up the newspaper, and they correlate. You understand it. Now, with Titus, what happened? He destroyed the Second Temple. And he said, look, I beat God of Israel. I'm the winner. The pagans beat the God of Israel. And he was so happy that he actually built an arch. You can go visit it in Rome. It's called the Arch of Titus. It was the first arch of victory in war. Since then, there's been more, the Arch of Triumph in France and other arches like that. But the first arch, Titus built in Italy, saying, we beat the God of Israel. He was so excited. But if you knew the Bible, then you knew that he didn't beat the God of Israel. This was part of prophecy, that the Jewish people were going to be kicked out of the land of Israel, and then one day they'd be regathered in the land of Israel. So he misunderstood what happened in history because he wasn't looking at it through the point of the Bible. He didn't know the Bible. People who knew the Bible knew what was going to happen and that we were going to come back. And so the same thing is today. People don't understand what's happening in Israel because they look at it through a political lens. But only by looking at it through a biblical lens, and I go through that in the book, Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel, can you understand really what's happening in Israel today?
Are you more hopeful for the future of Israel than you were before the presidency of Donald Trump?
Look, I think that one of the things people miss about Israel is it's the greatest redemption story of all time. As dangerous as people say Israel is and how hard, this is the greatest time in history to be a Jewish person. We have our land, we have a government, we have our own army. We don't have to live by anyone else's lead anymore. We can take care of ourselves. This is our revival. So we're very, very excited about the future of Israel. You know, we believe in the Bible. So our past, our present, and our future has been foretold. We all take comfort in the fact that there will be peace in Jerusalem. But it's up to people like you and me, Charlie, to make sure we go the easy way and not the hard way.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. And I encourage all of my listeners, if you have not been to Israel, you have to go. We actually are doing a private trip to Israel. If anyone listening to this wants to get more information, freedom@charliekirk.com. I reserve the right to reject anyone if they're awful people, but they could come freedom@charliekirk.com. We're going to Israel next May. I could tell you the best trip I ever took in my life was to Israel. The second best trip I ever took in my life was Israel. And as a Christian, to be able to walk where our Savior walked, to be able to go to Capernaum, to be able to go to the Sea of Galilee, to go to the Mount Beatitudes, to be able to go walk throughout the old city, to walk throughout the Christian quarter, to walk through Jerusalem. It's incredible. So I want to talk about this, though, which is how poorly treated the Jews and the Christians are in Israel, despite going above and beyond. And the Arabs, they like to play the victim card, just like the American left likes to play the victim card in our country. Can you talk about just the example of the city of Hebron, which is a biblical city where I think it's the Hall of the Patriarchs is the specific term, or the, you could correct me, but Abraham bought that land. And this is used a lot by the United Nations anti-Semite organization to try to say, oh, look, a Jewish occupation. But in reality, Jews and Israel only has 3% control over that city, and it's mostly an Arab city. Can you walk us through that example?
Yeah, look, I can give you many examples, and I will. First off, I'd like to say I'm so excited you're coming to Israel. That's a great
advantage.
Third time, I will host you in the Knesset if you want to come, and we'll do a big meeting there if you like.
I'll go give a speech. It'll make heads explode. It'll be great.
Let's do it. And so that's one thing. The second thing is, you're right. You know, people believe in the Bible. Our Ministry of Tourism has a great slogan. They say, if you like the book, you'll love the country. The Christians love coming to Israel. So it's a great thing that you're bringing in a group. But yeah, you know, it's really an incredible double standard. It's even a double standard here. And the best example is actually the Temple Mount. And we'll go into Hebron too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
In Israel, we have complete freedom of religion. Okay. So you can open up your Bible. You can pray anywhere you want. You can open up your Quran. You can open up the New Testament, the Old Testament. It doesn't matter. Everyone has freedom of religion in every spot by law, mandated by law, except for one place. The one place we gave control to the Muslim Waqf. In 1967, after Six-Day War, when we took over, once again, reunited Jerusalem and took over the old city, which was ours, we made this crazy decision that we'll let the Muslim Waqf take care of our holiest site in Judaism, the Temple Mount.
Massive mistake.
But wait, it gets worse. It's the only place where Jews and Christians aren't allowed to pray today. It's really the only place in Israel that if you go as a Christian and I go as a Jew, even though it's in Israel, we can't pray. We're not allowed to. And just shows you that even in Israel, where we're an extremely liberal and open society, okay, we treat ourselves like second-class citizens trying to make some sort of peace, to make some sort of cooperation. Another example is Hebron. In Hebron, we gave 95% of the city away. We kept a little slice, and we're trying to build an elevator for handicapped people to visit Abraham's tomb. What could be more you know, gracious than doing that? We want handicapped people to be able to visit Abraham's tomb. We not only are the Arab countries condemning us and saying we're inciting violence, the EU is. The EU just put out a statement, there should be no elevator built there for the handicapped because Jews are building it. I mean, it's really maddening.
Well, not only that, you split time with the Arabs in Hebron. They get it half the time and you get it half the time. And it's outrageous. And I will say the Israeli government has made some mistakes. The mistake is you guys should never have given up Gaza, ever. That was a huge mistake in the pursuit of peace or whatever that is. And so that's another lie that people hear, is that Gaza is an open air prison, that, you know, Israel is occupying that area. Can you walk us through exactly what is and is not happening in Gaza? I've never been there. I don't know if you've ever been there, because I don't think you'd survive. If you went there, they'd kill you. And because it's ruled by Hamas, I've looked into it, and I see where the rockets get launched at Jewish schools, where the bomb shelters exist and all of that. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. I was a tank gunner in the Israeli Defense Forces, and I served in Gaza. And, you know, it was one of the worst strategic mistakes, I think we'll be taught for decades, maybe centuries, about what a strategic mistake it was to disengage from Gaza. There were these beautiful Jewish communities there, just unbelievable agriculture and the buildings that were there and the homes and the community. And we made the decision in the name of peace to destroy all the Jewish communities and leave that area and turn it over to the Palestinian people. Well, what did the Palestinian people do? They elected Hamas, an internationally recognized terror organization, also by America, that then took over Gaza and immediately started shooting thousands and thousands of rockets on our civilian populations. If it wasn't for the Iron Dome systems that shoot the rockets out of the air, we would have thousands of casualties. They're literally just nonstop barrages of rockets. And it really showed the Israeli people that it was a huge mistake to put your hope into peace, like just by running away, that there needs to be peace through strength, as Ronald Reagan would say, that we need to find a way that we can have peace, but real peace, not just a document signed. And this was a huge mistake. And I think we learned our lesson on that one. I hope so.
Well, the one thing that Israel has done over the last 40 years is continually give up land in the pursuit of peace, gave up the Sinai Peninsula, gave up many parts to, as you mentioned, we gave up way too much sovereignty in the Golan Heights region. And what people don't realize is the inequality that exists in the Middle East. There's only one Jewish state, but there's plenty of places for Arabs to go, you know, suppress women and do all of those sorts of things. And what doesn't exist and what people don't realize is there's not a lot of democracy in the Middle East, but there is in Israel, where you have all three Abrahamic religions represented in the Knesset, in the Supreme Court as well, I believe. But the one point that you guys have is we want to be a Jewish state. We want to be able to have a Jewish state. Why can you have an Arab state? We can't have a Jewish state. And with that, you have freedom of religion. And I tell Americans this, and I want to film this next time I go, because they don't believe it. And I've actually never seen it actually captured, I think, well enough, where I drive down to Hebron from Jerusalem. I go south. And I remember asking my very good friend Amit and Matan from Im Toritzu. You know, they're great guys. And I remember, I think it was Matan that was driving, and there was this big orange sign with the arrows. And for an American, you can't really comprehend this. And I'm going to try to visualize this for my listeners. And I turned to my friend Matan. I said, what happens if we go to this red arrow to the right? Because it's all in, it was either in Arabic or it was in some other language I didn't understand. And so he said, oh, you die. So what are you talking about? You die. It's like, you don't understand. That is like either zone one or zone two of Palestinian Authority control. He's like, if you or I took a right turn right there, they'd cut our heads off and destroy our car. And I remember turning to him. I said, is this that simple? You turn right and we're in civilized society now and uncivilized society there. He said, yes, it's that simple. I said, what happens if the Arabs come here? They're like, you know, we treat them well. We probably give them food and give them government benefits. I said, that's the most perfect picture I could possibly imagine. I said, we turn right here, they'll kill us. And if we stay on this path, we won't, because we're in Israel. Can you talk about how that kind of double standard exists, and yet the UN and the EU continually do their Jew hatred every day?
Well, here it goes. We've divided the land of Israel 22 times since 1911, and it's only brought death and destruction. The actual size of Israel, if you compare it to the Arab world, is like a pack of matches on a football field. That's the dimensions. Okay. So the landmass of Israel is like a pack of matches. If you put it on a football field for for the complete landmass of the 22 Muslim Arab countries around it. So we got this little sliver of a country. And what we've done is we've then cut it up into little sections, because people don't understand. They're like, why don't you just give this to the Palestinians and you'll take this? Well, it's like cutting neighborhoods. It's like this half of the street will be theirs and this half will be ours, because the country is so small. And you're right. What we did was we made Area A, Area B, and Area C. And there's these huge red signs that literally say, Israelis, if you go in this area, you will be killed. I mean, that's it. That's what happens.
What wonderful people all time. We want to give these people more land. I mean, kill you. That's like a normal thing. I mean, it's disgusting.
Well, it's worse than that, because basically what the world wants is that their Palestinian state is void of Jews. So even if we did give them all the land, let's say, Jews aren't allowed to live in their land. They want it, what's called Judenrein, without Jews in their land. So they're saying that not only do you give up the land, but the Jews who are living there need to leave immediately, because Jews can't live in that land. Can you imagine saying that about any other minority, that minority can't live somewhere? I mean, it's really a crazy double standard. And it's worse because the EU is building all the time illegally in those areas.
Oh, with impunity. Yeah. Well, and so can you talk about this, which I go as far to say, and I know you might have to be more careful about this, I don't even think the whole Palestinian identity is something that they can claim. And I think that they need to be able to make an argument of what a Palestinian is and what it isn't. Because the Palestinian Authority is mostly Jordanian refugees. So if a Palestinian is an Arab, that's a very broad definition. If a Palestinian is someone who lives in Judea and Samaria, then I think that's an incomplete definition. If a Palestinian, they can't, is it a Muslim? So can you talk about this? I don't even like to call it, people say, oh, well, Palestine is being occupied. First of all, it doesn't exist. Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. It's a fiction of your imagination. I think that we actually have to get very firm on those arguments, because if we just give up the ground, then I think it's a gateway to losing the entire civil society of Israel.
Look, there is no Palestine. It's a fictitious country. It doesn't exist. I know that international community wants to give Palestine rights, but this is another thing that, you know, Donald Trump's administration did. He shut down the Palestinian embassy in Washington. That, you know, you can't have an embassy, you don't have a country. Look, the word Palestine comes from Palestina, which was what the Romans did. They took Jerusalem. They tried to erase the name of Jerusalem, so they named it Palestina. It's a Roman word. If you just look back, and the best evidence is this, go back. You're saying the Palestinians lived there before Israel, okay? Who is the president of Palestine? What did their flag look like? What currency did they use? There was no Palestine. There was never a Palestine. It was all, and today, 80% of Jordan is Palestinian. Why? Because there's the Hashemites and there's all the people in Jordan. What happened is, and if you look at the border of Israel, the British just cut a line straight down with a ruler and said, now this is Transjordan and this is Palestine. Okay, so the people on this side of the line, who are the same people from the other side of the line, were now from the area known as Palestine. But even the word Palestine then was not true, because Palestine was used to talk about Israel. You know, it wasn't the Jerusalem Post, it was the Palestine Post, the Jewish country. So you're right. There needs to be a real education of what's the real history. But that's also what we're seeing. People want to believe revisionist history. Even real history and facts don't really make sense anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the Palestinian Authority, they have their own elections, and they keep on electing this tyrant, Mahmoud Abbas, who is a complete and total sociopath. He's pathological. He gets hundreds of millions of dollars from the Western world, and none of it actually reaches their citizens. So what would be different if all of a sudden we gave you sovereign country status? You'd kill more Jews than your country? Can you talk about how the Palestinian Authority, in a lot of different ways, already exists as their own government, and they're screwing it up even in their infant stages?
Well, the truth is Mahmoud Abbas has not held an election in decades. He's not getting elected. He refused to hold election because he knows he would lose. I think the worst thing that's happening to the Palestinian people is the Palestinian Authority. These people are gangsters and they're stealing money. You know, they're billionaires. Suha Arafat, the widow of Yasser Arafat, I think is worth $8 billion. I mean, it's just, they're taking international money. Their homes are these magnificent palaces. They give no infrastructure to their people, no roads, no schools, none of that. And the community keeps on giving them more and more money. And that's another thing that President Trump did. He stopped cut off funding to the Palestinian Authority because they were using it to pay terrorists who killed not just Israelis, but Americans. So the American government was literally paying the terrorists who killed Americans. That's what the policy of America was before Donald Trump became president.
It's incredible. And yeah, we subsidized Israeli citizens slaughtered, basically, through giving money. And the Palestinian Authority, they are so medieval in what they do. If you kill a Jew, your family gets money. I mean, that's how it works. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's, you know, they run a program called Pay to Slay. So if you do a terrorist attack in Israel and you kill one person, you get a certain amount of salary for the rest of your life. If you sit in jail, you get every month a salary, a certain stipend. Okay. If you kill two people, you get more money. If you kill 50 people, you get tons of money. So they're actually paying a salary for life, which is way higher than the salary that people get in perpetuity forever on the number of people you've killed. That's what the Palestinian Authority, that's what the, not Hamas, that's what the Palestinian Authority is doing. And that's why it's so important that America cut those funds in the Taylor Force Act. The Taylor Force Act said, we're not going to give American tax dollars to pay terrorists. Now, it seems like obvious, but guess what? Every other country is still paying the Palestinian Authority to pay these stipends. It's still coming in. In fact, just this week, they gave another, I think it was the EU or the UN, gave another $30 million to fix the gap between the money they had and the money they didn't have to pay terrorist families.
Yeah, so they can incentivize, you know, more killing of Jews in the Middle East. In closing here, Josh, can you just kind of give us an idea of what would happen to Israel if Joe Biden became president? What would the region look like? What would the future of our relationship be?
Look, I think the problem isn't Joe Biden so much as the people that's backing him. I mean, you got to see the people who are supporting his candidacy and the people around him. These people have very clear agenda against Israel. These people want to boycott Israel. They want to divest from Israel. They want to cut off Israel. And these are the people who are giving money to Joe Biden right now for his campaign. And money talks. I mean, he's going to listen to what they're saying. And so I think that, you know, and I'm not saying vote Republican or vote Democrat, but I am saying vote Donald Trump if you want to be pro-Israel. Because in Israel, Donald Trump has done more for this country than any president before. And if you read my book, Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel, I don't say vote for Donald Trump in the book, but you can see if you go through the book that all the things that he's done for Israel because of Christian support. So I think the most important thing is that Christians need to get out and make their voices heard.
I love that, Josh. Well, thank you so much for joining the program. It's Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel. And God bless Israel. Look forward to seeing you soon in Jerusalem.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Josh. See you soon.
Thanks so much for listening. Please consider getting involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com, tpusa.com. Get engaged and get involved by emailing us, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. And please consider supporting our program at charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless.